Monster Man, special episode, The Monsters of Glorantha. Before we begin, I need to give a content warning for this episode. This is an episode about the Monsters of Glorantha, and I would be not serving the legacy of that game if I didn't talk about the brew. And I wouldn't be talking about the brew if I didn't talk about sexual violence, which is a big part of what those creatures are all about. And some people don't want to hear about that stuff. And if you don't, you're going to want to skip the brew section. That content goes from about the 5-minute mark to about 12 minutes 30. If you don't want to listen to that, I far from blame you. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode brought to you by Patreon supporter Evan Hughes, who wants me to talk about the Monsters of Glorantha. Now, a cynic, you know, someone who had no joy in their heart and no sense of the real fundamental truths of the world, would say that Glorantha is my favorite fantasy RPG setting. Of course, the objective fact is that Glorantha is the best RPG setting, and I am looking forward to talking about it. So thank you very much to Evan for requesting this episode topic. I was very excited when I got the notification. If you'd like to be like Evan and request a special episode of your own, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and sign up at the $5 level. And if you sign up at that level, not only will you receive the lower tier rewards such as bonus episodes on whatever topics take my fancy, scenarios and stuff that I post up there when the mood takes me, my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I, on a much more regular schedule, discuss the deities and demigod supplement and religion and mythology, but you'll also get the opportunity to pick a topic for a special episode like this one. And we've had such a great variety of topics from the patrons and more great ones to come. Anyway, Evan, once again, thank you very much for your choice. Let's jump in and talk about Glorantha. Now, a real quick piece of background here. Glorantha has been the setting for a number of different role-playing games and also some board war games. It was created by Greg Stafford, and then, of course, over the many decades that it's existed, many, many other writers have contributed to it. I don't want to start listing them because we'd be here all day. It originally appeared in an RPG as the setting for the game RuneQuest, and that's back where it is now, but over the years, there have also been other Gloranthan games, and the one that I have played the most is HeroQuest. That's a role-playing system. It's a generic system, but it's specifically originated with Glorantha, designed by Robin D. Laws. And I don't have the new RuneQuest Glorantha books because I am trying to wean myself off of big-ticket RPG purchases where I don't think I'm actually likely to play the game, which does mean that I'm buying a lot of little RPGs, but never mind that. So it may be that the discussion of these creatures has evolved in the new Gloranthan bestiary. That's very possible. I'd love to hear about it if that's the case. There are many different kinds of monsters in Glorantha, and indeed Glorantha was very groundbreaking in its treatment of monsters. A troll pack, an old supplement for RuneQuest, was probably the first thing to take a really detailed look at the ecology and society of a monstrous species. I mentioned that in my monstrous player character episode. Trollpack, you know, even today remains one of the definitive supplements of that type. But I'm not going to talk about trolls or tusk riders or dragonutes or any of the other weird creatures of Glorantha, each with their own history, society, mythology. Mythology is very important in Glorantha, all that stuff. Instead, today I'm mainly going to concentrate on the creatures of chaos. In Glorantha, chaos is a malignant force that exists in the world and is characterized by sort of violations of the natural order. Combinations of creatures that can't possibly exist, behavior that transgresses against very, very fundamental social norms, all that kind of thing. And it is fought by forces that arguably are almost as bad as chaos itself. Most pantheons have a chaos-fighting god. In the Orlanthe pantheon, this is the Storm Bull, Urox. And the followers of Storm Bull are god-awful berserkers who you actually don't really want hanging around your clan until chaos turns up. If you've noticed that I'm viewing Glorantha from a very Orlanthe perspective, that's how it's going to go. I am mainly a Dragon Pass guy, if that means anything to you. I'm going to look at things mostly from a Dragon Pass perspective rather than a Praxian perspective. And this is the kind of setting where you can say that sort of thing and be serious. So today I'm going to talk about three chaos monsters: the Brew, the Woctopus, and the Headhanger. And then, if we have time, I'm going to talk about everyone's other favorite Glorantin quote-unquote monster, the Ducks. First off, what to say about the Brew? The Brew are, at once, the iconic Glorantin monster and a pretty awkward part of the setting. Let's start with the iconic aspect. The Brew are goat-headed beastmen, and if that sounds familiar to you, it's because the beastmen from Warhammer are based on the Brew. Not to get too deep in the weeds, but you can see that in Ravening Hordes, the first version of Ravening Hordes for Warhammer Fantasy Battle 3rd Edition, there is a beastman standing on a stone which has Glorantin runes carved on it. This is obviously a recycled piece of RuneQuest art because, for a while, Games Workshop were the UK publisher of RuneQuest. They are goat-headed beastmen, and they are foul. The mildest activities that you're going to find them engaged in are foul. They're going to be poisoning wells, digging up tombs, kidnapping babies, all that kind of stuff. And in this sense, the Brew are sort of the Glorantin version of orcs in the sense that they are the creature where, like, if you run into a party of trolls on the road in Glorantha, they could very well be dangerous, but if you have a language in common, you can negotiate. You know, if you run into Dragonutes, then they might be harmless. You know, they're serving some arcane purpose, goodness only knows what it is, and maybe if you leave them alone, they won't bother you. But the Brew are flying the black flag, right? They are shoot on sight. And it's almost as though Stafford and his colleagues were trying to, you know, deal with the, as we've said before, kind of questionable premise of the orc. You know, this is an intelligent creature. Is it a monster? By making a creature so unutterably monstrous that there could be no doubt about how you were supposed to interact with it, while simultaneously making the rest of the quote-unquote monsters rather more nuanced. That's fine and all, but the Brew deal with a subject that maybe a lot of people aren't super comfortable with having in their fantasy adventure games, and that's sexual violence. The Brew reproduce by impregnating pretty much anything, and then the young claw themselves out in a bloody alien-style kind of event, and what that means is that Brew don't find a lot of willing partners, you know? Because who wants to get the baby's claw the way out of them? So, the Brew are associated with one of the most controversial figures in Glorantin mythology, that's Thed, the goddess of rape. Now, there's a whole lot to be said about Thed and her role in the Pantheon of Chaos. We don't really have time to go into it. I'm not 100% convinced by any of the arguments, but ultimately, like all aspects of chaos, she represents a contradiction that Glorantin cultures cannot reconcile. You know, Thed was the victim of this crime committed by the brother of Orlanth, and her apotheosis was to inflict the crime inflicted on her on the world. And you can see that as, you know, those to whom evil is done do evil in return, or you can see that as, you know, victim blaming and essentially removing Thed's agency, trapping her in a cycle of victimization. And I think that either of those interpretations is supposed to be possible, because this is meant to be a moment of horror. You know, we're meant to be repelled and horrified by what happened to Thed and by Thed. It's a little bit what of something that I've said before about, you know, the Brew are both monstrous and terrifying, they're also pathetic. You don't want them to get a hold of you, but you also don't want to end up like them. And that's fine and all. Like, I don't think that these topics can't be included in a role-playing game. I don't even think that they can't be included in a fantasy adventure game. I think it's possible to discuss how a society deals with these issues of sexual assault and sexual violence, and to do that in a magical context. But I feel like you kind of have to be in the right frame of mind for it, you know? Like, a whole lot of players don't want to engage with that, and I, for one, don't blame them. And a whole lot of people would be worried, even if they were interested in engaging in that, that the topic would be handled in a sensational manner. And I also don't blame them. I am a little bit like this myself, you know? I firmly believe that, you know, any topic can be handled in a role-playing game, as long as the players are all kind of on the same page regarding the boundaries of the discussion. At the same time, like, if you were to look at my Amazon Prime watch list, you would see that, like, piling up on the right-hand side of it are very serious movies about very serious subjects that I genuinely do intend to watch, and I know that they're great. Like, Moonlight is over there on the far right. I absolutely want to watch it. I am going to watch it. It's supposed to be terrific. Everyone says it's great, but what everyone also says about it is that it is a massive bummer. And I'm just very seldom in the mood to, like, sit down and be like, oh yeah, I want to be super sad. Great art can make you sad. Great art can make you feel repulsed and horrified. Great art can make you feel victimized. Like, that can be great art, but that's not necessarily what a lot of people want to do every other Thursday. So that's the awkward thing about The Brew. The great thing about The Brew is that if you want to, you can just switch that dial right off. The Brew are also associated with the gods of madness and disease. And if you want to say, yeah, these filthy goat guys go rampaging across the landscape, poisoning wells, blighting crops, causing the sheep to come out with sickness, bringing plague to villages, all of that kind of thing. Like, we're just going to leave out that other part. And they'll eat anything. You know, they're goats, right? We're just going to leave out that other part. We're just going to kind of not approach this subject that is, in the real world, very sensitive for a lot of people in the form of, you know, goat monsters. And the Brew remain this repellent and horrifying adversary. So you don't get into some of the quote-unquote profound aspects of Glorantha mythology, but you also manage to, like, retain the Brew's qualities as villains, and I think that's fine. I'm sure someone will link to the essay in defense of Thed that Ron Edwards, of all people, wrote many years ago. I think it's well written. I think it's a very charitable reading of the material, but that's an issue for another time. So I think the Brew are great, but I think you can't go into them without a clear understanding of exactly where you and your players want the dial positioned on the Brew. And you're not deviating from the source material if you do this. The early versions of the Brew had them as just, like, horrible. And the sexual aspect of them was not particularly played up. At least that's the impression I get from reading older RuneQuest scenarios, where they are just presented as, like, antagonists that you're in there to murder. Spreading disease and mutation is almost, like, more their primary thing. So yeah, basically we have a dial that goes from orcs, but more plaguey and horrible, all the way to, holy god, this is the worst thing I've ever encountered. And I think that you can present the Brew with this mixture of hatred, sick revulsion, and even guilt, but, like, you don't have to. Alright. So from a monster that's controversial for one reason, we're going to move to a monster that's controversial for a somewhat more ridiculous reason, and that is, of course, the Walktopus. Now, the Walktopus is one of those Glorianthan monsters that is looked down on sometimes because it's kind of silly. Like, it has a silly name. It's a dude with an octopus for a head, and it's a little bit ridiculous, but it's meant to be ridiculous in that kind of Hieronymus Bosch sort of way. The thing about the Walktopus that makes it a chaos monster is that it should not exist, right? It is quite literally a thing that should not be. And the game deals with the absurd aspects of the Walktopus by making the Walktopus a wrecking crew of a monster. It's got a very powerful poison gas attack, and then it gets in there and starts to beat you with its tentacles, and it is extremely difficult to kill. It has powerful regenerative capabilities, and they talk about, like, you know, it can regenerate from, like, one bit of its flesh that gets hacked up, and there are all these examples of doing things like cutting the Walktopus into tiny pieces and then dissolving each individual piece in acid. You know, that might kill him. The Walktopus is a monster that would sort of plague an area like this. You better stay out of there. There's Walktopus. Just one, but is so hard to kill. You can beat it, but that just means you're going to have to fight it again unless you do something very clever. And very few adventuring parties wandering around the isolated wilderness have, like, a vat of acid with them, you know? So I like the Walktopus. It seems like a monster that, you know, came out of a medieval illumination or something like that, and it fulfills an important chaos role as a brute. The third chaos creature on my list is the Headhanger, and the Headhanger is a grotesque creature that kind of looks like a giant slug or maggot, and it chomps people's heads off, and then after a few days, they regrow almost like fruit at the end of its tendrils. Once it has done that, it has access to their memories. So it starts to kind of know what's going on. It gets more and more powerful basically depending on how many heads it has, which gives it access to a different sort of level of memories. Basically, it needs to keep a steady supply of heads. That is just a symbol of the fact that it's eaten your soul to survive. It needs to keep a steady, like, soul battery going. So during combat, the heads hanging off of the Headhanger will scream, bite, and spit, which in the HeroQuest, or Hero Wars, which is the first edition of HeroQuest system, increases its ability to terrify. Like, they don't really do anything because they're severed heads dangling at the end of mucousy tendrils, but trying to fight a giant slug while your cousin's head wails inarticulately at you from the end of one of its snot ropes, like, That's more difficult than just trying to fight a giant slug, even if the head's not really doing anything. So again, I love that grotesque alienness of the headhanger, and the fact that it absorbs your cousin's memories. So like, if a headhanger kills someone that you know, there's a good chance that you're next on its list, because it needs to keep the head supply coming, and your cousin knew where you live. And one of the nice things about the headhanger is that it's a very non-Glorantin monster. Well, not non-Glorantin, but it's generalizable, right? The Wachtip is just a big brute, but the headhanger worked really well in any other fantasy game, or for that matter, it could work in a science fiction game. I mean, you'd have to come up with a little more malarkey about the properties of the mucus, but whatever. All right, so finally, I don't think we can talk about quote-unquote monsters in Glorantha unless we talk about the ducks. But, of course, the thing about the ducks is that they're not monsters. I mean, not monsters any more than dwarves or elves are, but they're non-human creatures. You know, one of the things that's really interesting to me about Glorantha is it has this kind of mixture of, like, complete messing around and complete straight-facedness. You know, I have feelings about the King of Sartar in a way that I don't about any other kind of game fiction. Glorantha, at times, is kind of like this, you know, scholarly game for people who care a lot about history and anthropology. And yet also at times it has these ducks in it who are like Donald Duck, like little walk-in anthropomorphic ducks. Their species name, I don't like the Latin species names, is Anatanthropus Donaldi. That's stupid. And the ducks are stupid. And the thing that makes them fantastic is that they exist in Glorantha where nobody thinks they're weird. Like, no one thinks that it's weird to have a race of talking ducks. They're centaurs and minotaurs and satyrs, and they're just another type of beast folk. And the important lesson that the ducks teach about the culture of Dragon Pass is that they're considered to be, they are also Orlanthi. So like the humans of, you know, the Kingdom of Sartar, they worship the storm god Orlanth in his many aspects. And so they are capable of doing all the things that identify you as a person to an Orlanthi, that they can, you know, when you meet one, they will give you the hospitality greeting. They'll just do it in a funny little duck voice. So you'll be approaching the edge of the marsh, and a quacky little voice will go, "Halt! Who comes here to a place that is not allowed to everyone? Do you come in friendship or as a foe?" Which is exactly what would happen if you walked up to the Tula of an Orlanthi clan. So ducks are people to Orlanthi in a way that humans who are not Orlanthi kind of aren't, which is a point about Orlanthi cultural mores. So that's interesting. But other than that, they're just there for the traditional 1-2 punch. So there's a bit, for example, in the video game King of Dragon Pass, where you encounter a duck champion who's all talking big about wanting to fight one of your champions, but if you agree to a fight, even to first blood, he kills your guy, because the first hit kills, because he's a Humakti Death Lord, and he's, you know, a one-man army, or one-duck army. But to me, the ducks are almost more interesting because they represent a funny thing about Glorantha. So we've talked about the early days of Dungeons & Dragons and how other games, as they came into existence, attempted to differentiate themselves from D&D. So for example, Tunnels & Trolls differentiates itself from D&D by being lighter, more simplified, and more humorous. By contrast, something like Chivalry and Sorcery differentiates itself from D&D by being like crunchier and more quote-unquote realistic. And then games with like detailed settings, Empire, the Petal Throne, whatever, attempt to differentiate themselves from D&D with their setting. So RuneQuest tries to do all three, which is really interesting, right? So obviously the RuneQuest system is very different. It's skill-focused. It's a percentile system. You can get your leg cut off, all that stuff. And is an attempt to make combat more quote-unquote realistic, according to what its author, Steve Perrin, knew about medieval sword fighting. And then the setting is much more of, like, Greg Stafford, you know, the late Greg Stafford, I think he would not be upset if I called him a hippie, you know, thinking about anthropology and how that, you know, how societies would exist in a magical world. But then it's also got the usual collection of silly in-jokes among its creators and their friends. So it has all of these different aspects of D&D differentiation, and I think that it's, you know, Glorantha was in the wilderness for a long time, but I think it's come back in a big way now, and I think that that is partly to do with the fact that those, you know, those axes of differentiation mean that it can thrive in a world that is so dominated by Dungeons & Dragons, because it's so obviously something different. And I think the ducks, to some extent, are a part of that. Like, it would be hard to get away, I feel, with the ducks in Dungeons & Dragons, even though Greyhawk is a manifestly less serious place than Glorantha. Anyway, this is just my kind of late-night musings on what's up with ducks. Okay, so anyway, those are some of my favorite Glorianthan monsters, but there's so many more I could have talked about. I could have talked about the Morakanths. I love those guys. They're like intelligent tapirs who herd humans as animals. We could have talked about Dragonutes, who are, you know, reptilian dragon-worshipping creatures who go through this life cycle, which is both like a biological life cycle, but also like a spiritual life cycle where they're attempting to ascend toward a higher spiritual plane. We could talk about the Tusk Riders, who are cool dudes who ride around on boars. There are just so many possibilities, and that's without even getting into the Uz, the trolls, who have their own rich and complex culture and variety. So there's so much to love about Glorianthan monsters, but few of them are exportable, which is the interesting thing. That's why I pointed it out about the headhanger. Anyway, Evan, thank you so much for like offering me the opportunity to talk about one of my favorite settings. Before I go, a personal note. I mentioned Greg Stafford, obviously, several times throughout this podcast. You can't really talk about Glorantho without talking about Greg Stafford. I actually met Greg Stafford once. You know, I'm from the Bay Area of Northern California, or at least that's where I grew up. And that's also, of course, where Chaosium was back then, and Greg Stafford was around there a lot. I don't know if he was living there or just, you know, happened to be there, but anyway, he was at a convention. And I was there at the convention with my younger brother and my brother's friend Bernie. When I was a kid, I knew that the gaming community was full of interesting stuff that I wanted to be part of, but wasn't really old enough to participate in it at the level that I'd like. I think, did I say I was around 15 when this was taking place? Maybe 14. And I had been wandering around this convention and not really like finding anything to do. I hadn't booked games in advance. This was either Pacificon or DungeonCon. I want to say it was probably Pacificon, but it was a long time ago. I don't really remember. And anyway, the one game that I wound up playing at that convention was a playtest for a new edition of Nomad Gods that Greg Stafford was running. At that time, I didn't really know anything about RuneQuest or Pendragon. I knew who Greg Stafford was. I think he was wearing, a name badge or something. But I didn't really know. And so at one point, he asked me what I knew about Glorantha, and I didn't really know very much. And I said, I think it's, like, all I know is that it's a fantasy setting that's kind of different from the usual sort of Western Europe with monsters. And he said, "How old are you?" And I said, "I'm 15. And he said, "You're not a typical 15-year-old. And that was just, when you're kind of a nerdy, awkward, difficult kid, more than anything else, you want to be like treated like an adult. But at the same time, you can't really be treated like an adult because you don't have the maturity of an adult. And to be kind of recognized and accepted within that community that I so desperately wanted to be a part of was just a tremendously good feeling. And, even though it was only this short time, it actually turned out to be quite an important memory for me. I was really sad that at last year's Dragon Meet, I was unable to go to the Greg Stafford Memorial event. I had to catch my train. So I guess this is just my attempt to acknowledge the importance that Greg Stafford and Glorantha have had for me, and to acknowledge the great loss that his passing now, obviously, nearly a year ago, represents for our community, but also the hope that his legacy will continue to inspire future creativity, which I think ultimately is the best thing that you can hope for. And it is a measure of my respect for his creative achievement that I'm going to echo what other Glorianthophiles say to memorialize him, even though it makes me sound like a rotten old lunar when I say, "We are all us." Anyway, that's enough sentiment from me. I know that I spent a lot of time talking about the more kind of controversial aspects of the brew, but I really think that in 2019, that is kind of what stands out about them. And I'm interested to hear other people's perspectives on incorporating this type of monster into your game. Like, again, something that I would handle very cautiously, and I think my impulse in a Glorianthan game would be to dial down that aspect of the brew. Yeah, I ran a Glorianthan game for years and I didn't have any brew in it. Oh, there was some brew in a hero quest, I think. There were like a portent of evil things to come, but the campaign didn't get that far. Anyway, again, thank you so much for listening. Evan, thank you for your support on Patreon, and I'll be back at the end of this week with an episode about flightless bird monsters and 19th century American spiritualists. Yes, I'm serious. On Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.